Mr. Crawford, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Please rise and face the front. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I have several public comment cards tonight. I'm just going to remind the audience that the board cannot respond other than questions of clarification. And we'll start with Inga Schlesler from the Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. Could somebody please turn off the heater outside? So I came out of my cave just for you guys, and I wasn't on the agenda, so that was kind of a shock. Thank you. But I understand. It's a special meeting. I wanted to talk with you about the relationship between Marysville Joint Unified School District and Marysville Unified Teachers Association. We've had some really great success over this last year, not without, you know, bumps. Everything just doesn't get to go smoothly all the time. We reached some agreements to provide for collaboration time, more balanced stipend schedule, the ability to get professional development that meets the needs of the teachers, a maximum number on caseloads, and we managed to get over the obstacles that came in the way because we value each other. Part of my job, largest part of my job, has to do with stopping those obstacles from becoming large boulders that block us. And I'm always trying to think of ways when I see something come up to address those things with the district. Normally that person that I talk to is Mr. Carrion, and I think we both understand how important that is. And we don't need to talk about everything out in the public and make it all a big deal. We just get past those things. An example of that is when an administrator is not maintaining the integrity of our contract, and when I'm getting phone calls, texts, emails, letters frequently, as an example, about the issues that are happening at a school. I bring those things to the district office. I don't bring them to you because I don't think that that's something that I need to bring out in public. But trust me, there's a lot of details about things that happen that have our administration make the decisions they do about those situations. We know that the more public an obstacle becomes, the bigger it is and the uglier it becomes because there's misunderstandings. I think that the PD, traveling PD and pay for that and everything that I'm sure all of us are aware of is a good example of that, where if we don't just talk about it together and work it out without it becoming a big deal, it can get to be that. So I'm afraid that you guys may have done that at your last meeting. And being the person that's going to have to deal with the results of that, one of the people that has to deal with the results of that, I'm asking that you reconsider, that you go into closed session and reconsider what you've done. I don't want to be a person to come up here and tell you details here recorded in public session. I would be happy to meet with any of you and talk about what I've done this past year in relationship to this topic. Now it seems that this isn't me, by the way. It seems that you've got other people here to talk about this same issue. It was a difficult year with two in particular administrators in this district. And I'm sure that both of them are very fine, wonderful people. I worked with one of them over at Cedar Lane in the past, and I, great person. But I think before having the responsibility of having our teachers and students being under the authority of that individual, they need to have more training, more experience, a better understanding of the importance of the decisions that they make. I think that's all I'm going to say. But if you have any questions or if you'd like to talk to me about this issue, please contact me. Thanks.
Thank you, Inga. Okay, next up is Manu Powell.
Honorable Board of Trustees, esteemed MJUSD Cabinet, it's very hard for me to be here today. I have gone back and forth about this. It saddens me. It gives me a lot of pain to be here. But in the end, I decided to be here for the children that I serve in this district. I have been an educator for over 40 years now. I've taught in different settings, different countries, from the elitist of schools to where I have the most needy students. I have worked with principals. I have been a principal for 12 years. I have worked with principals who have different personalities, different work habits, you know, who deal with issues differently. But I have never in my 40 years of teaching career faced what I have faced this year. There were days when I didn't want to come to school. I didn't feel motivated enough to come. But I always thought of the children that I have to serve. I'm here for the children because I feel very deeply for them. And my whole reason for being a teacher is to, in some way, give back to those children, take care of those children, to keep them safe. And I felt that my children were not safe this year. I want to give you a small example. I had a child in my class who, at the beginning of the year, I think around October, I discovered this child was cutting herself up. I was pretty shocked because I'm coming here from Marin where I didn't have these circumstances. I immediately went to my director and I told her what this child was doing. My director called the girl to her office, talked with her, and sent her away. She did try to contact the parent. The parent, she was not available that day. Nothing was done after that. I contacted the parent. I talked to the parent. We had several meetings with the child present, sometimes without the child being present there. And me and the parent built up a relationship. Then towards the end of the school year, I think we were in the second last week of school, when one day when I went to the cafeteria to pick up my class, I saw 5-6 children sitting outside the cafeteria, and they had deep, finger-thick, deep welts on their arms. All these 5-6 children. And I was shocked. And I looked at them and I said, sweethearts, what are we doing? We have no right to hurt ourselves. I said, this has to stop right now. I'm warning you. And then I asked them, I said, what is going on? And then this little girl, very chirpy, she says, oh, Mrs. Paul, we are doing this challenge. And I said, no, you're not doing any challenge. I said, this is wrong. I said, you have no right to hurt your body. And I took, because I didn't have much time, I had to take my class back to the classroom. I took my class back to the classroom. On the way, there were 2 students who wanted to share more details about this challenge with me. And since I was surrounded with the other children, I did not think it appropriate to talk to them right then about this challenge. And they said, Mrs. Paul, we want to go and talk with the principal. And I said, okay, because I saw the stress on their faces. I saw how distressed these children were. I said, okay, go to the office and talk to her. These girls looked all over the school for the principal. They waited in the office for a long time. They could not find the principal. Finally, the office staff gave them a form to fill out. They filled out the form and they came back to the classroom. They looked pretty disappointed. They said they could not find the principal and talk to her. I told them it's okay. You know, principal will take care of this. Later on, after the school was over, I went back to the principal. In the meantime, the principal did call the girl and talk to her. So at the end of the school day, I went to the principal and asked her, you know, and talked to her about this incident. And she told me, yes, Mrs. Paul, I talked to her. I asked her, is this respectful? Is this responsible? And is it safe? And the girl told me no. And so I told her, okay, sweetheart, we are not going to do this. And she sent the girl back. No follow-up was done. That night when I went home, I could not sleep the whole night. Because by then I knew more details about this challenge. Children told me it was a challenge, it was a 40-day challenge, where each day the children got a more difficult task to do. And on the 40th day, they killed themselves. With that knowledge, I could not sleep that night because our school was going into summer break. This child is a homeless child. She's under very, very difficult circumstances. And whole year, you know, we were trying to support her. And I said, if this child does anything to herself over the summer break, I will not be able to live with it. So next day morning, I came to the school. I went straight and I tried to talk to the principal. She was not in. So I went back to my classroom, started prepping up for the day. Then again, I went back to the office to talk to her. Her door was closed. She was in the room with some other people. I was unable to contact her. So I went back. I had two choices, either to let it go or to get help. I decided to get help. I called the executive director of special education and I spoke with her. As soon as I told her it was a 40-day challenge, she immediately said, oh, it's a blue whale challenge. And I do not watch TV. I do not go to the internet very often. So I was unaware of what this blue whale challenge was. And she filled me on it. And she said that it said that 130 children have already killed themselves. There are many school districts that have sent home letters informing the people, educating the parents about this challenge. And here we were, we had done nothing. After I had spoken to the executive director of special education, they were at the school site with a psychiatrist within an hour. She also told me that she's putting this child into a program which has many programs overarching over it, and that they are going to keep this child safe over the summer break. And I was really, really grateful to her. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have, excuse me if I don't pronounce your names right though, Jawan Gag.
Yes. Good evening, Dr. Todd, Mr. Carrion, Mr. DiGiulio, distinguished members of the Board of Trustees. Please excuse my dress. I just left our ranch working alongside my father, but I came here because I thought it was important to represent my colleagues and our students. I will be reading two letters from colleagues tonight. First letter, beginning of the letter. Good evening, MJUSD Board of Trustees. I am sad that I even have to write this letter. Honestly, I had tremendous faith in our board. After we heard that the principal was not coming back next year, we all breathed a sigh of relief. And we're thankful that the district and the board had heard our concerns. But after the last meeting, our nightmare has returned. I've been working for MJUSD for 24 years. I worked under 7 administrators. I've never seen such disarray, such a deep division among staff members, such insanity. Most of the time, I felt like I was at the circus, and no one knew what the other was doing. Even though I was her secretary, I never knew where she was or when she was on or off campus. When the teachers, students, or parents came in looking for her, I just looked dumb for not knowing her whereabouts. At times, I felt she did this on purpose. I felt that she didn't have answers to a lot of the questions that we had, or most importantly, the parents had. It was always, let me check with the district and I will get back to you. I would wait and never get an answer. I have listened to many lies she told parents and answers that she chose not to give. One time she told a parent that we didn't have money for tutoring. Another time she didn't want to fill out a verification form, so she said that only the school psychologist could fill it out, and since he wasn't at our school site that day, the parent had to wait until the psych returned to campus. It was a military dad who he said he needed the form as soon as possible and could not wait. He also told her he'd done the same form earlier at other schools and the principals always filled it out for him. Side note, the student was not in any kind of special ed classroom. Hence, there was no need for a psych to be involved with filling out the form. This is only one example that made me feel like she didn't like interacting with our parents. She always wanted me to take a message or schedule meetings with them in her calendar, which was fine, but when I did, 75% of the time she canceled these appointments. This not only happened with me, it also happened with a school clerk. At the beginning of the school year, I was anxious, waiting to see what the new administrator would bring to Johnson Park. I was hoping for a wonderful school year. I prayed for a strong principal who would settle into our administrative position within a few months. She said that the relationship between the principal and the school secretary was the most important. I came to realize after our initial meeting in August, she was just trying to get clues on everyone's ties with the old principal. Now looking back, it only seemed that she wanted to know which staff members were close to the previous principal. Later I thought, why would that even matter to her? Now I realize that she had her own agenda. Staff members felt like they had targets on their backs because of the relationships that they had with the previous principal. She point blank asked me what my relationship with the old principal was. I told her it was strictly business and we didn't hang out after work. Sadly, I don't think she believed me. She made me feel isolated. None of the teachers wanted to come into the office anymore, not even to sign in or sign out, not to check their boxes. Seems like they were just scared of coming into the office. I would never see the new teachers, maybe only once a week. This made me extremely stressed out. I could never call in sick. I had no office coverage in the afternoons once the part-time clerk was gone. The principal was not approachable. She didn't want to come out of her office. If she did, she went straight out the door. She would usually go and hide in one of her buddy's rooms for hours. If she went to lunch, she would never let me know if she was going off campus. If she went to meetings, she would not let me know. One day, during the last 2 weeks of school, she went to lunch with one of her buddies. Her car was still in the parking lot, so I thought that she was still on campus. Students were coming in to report about their classmate taking on the Blue Whale Challenge. I had no idea what this was. As they explained to me, I panicked. I looked for her everywhere for the last 30 minutes. I called all of her buddies' rooms and even the staff room. She was nowhere to be found. When she finally returned, she asked me, "I heard you were looking for me. What did you need?" After the first 2 months, I soon realized that she was becoming friends with and who she was targeting. Certain teachers, she would do walkthroughs 3 or 4 times a day. Others, none at all. From the beginning of the year, she never went over safety procedures with teachers, including the new teachers. The new teachers, about 5 out of 15, would walk around campus clueless. Then we came to find out that they were told to stay away from certain staff members. All discipline consequences were taken away. She did not only She did not like calling parents as she didn't want them to be mad. One day, a student texted another saying that she was going to get beat up that day after school, again at morning recess. The same student reaffirmed to her friends that she was going to get beat up, that she was going to beat up this girl after school. The principal decided to do nothing and sent the threatened girl back to class. Another day, a fight had occurred in the bathroom. Yard duties radioed me. I looked for the principal everywhere. After a few attempts, I paged her on the loudspeaker. When she got back to the office, she was angry with me and told me to never page her again. This year, we had an SEC student run off campus, and she would not let us call the sheriff's department. Once she told the clerk, "Don't ever again say let's call the sheriff." Once, there was a police chase next to our school. It ended with a car crashing into the neighbor's yard. One of our parents chased the boys from the car. They ran into our school's direction. My first thought was to lock the front doors. The principal ran outside instead. The parent tackled one of the suspects on the ground, and the principal walked up to him and asked him to release the suspect to her so she could take him into the office to have a chat. Another teacher, who was on the phone with 911, frantically told her not to do so, as it could be extremely dangerous. At the same time, the second suspect ran along the side of our school with our students outside on the playground, and she was still arguing to bring the one suspect who had a backpack on into our school. It seems to me that the safety of our staff, and especially students, was not her main priority. She chose not to show up even at main school events. This shows that she didn't care for our school at all. At the beginning of the year, we had a fundraiser called a jogathon. The whole school was out on the field. She did not go out and cheer the students and staff. Back to school night, she didn't want to welcome or address the parents. I suggested that she should do so and at least introduce herself as a new principal. I'm not sure if she ever did. Site council was held in secrecy. It was often canceled and rescheduled extremely short notices. The members were handpicked or chosen by her and not voted in as they should have been. Some of the members had no idea that they were being taken off the list. Their name was simply struck off and new names were added to the council. Lastly, she gave up. She gave up by the end of March. She was absent a lot, coming in late and going home early. She would not step out of her room after March. We had no idea of anything. She finally told the teachers at an emergency staff meeting on May 19th that she was moving on to new and better things. At the same time, she never said a word to any classified staff officially. The classified staff had no idea about the emergency staff meeting. Sad to say, but parents and students were asking me if I was a principal. In conclusion, this has been one of the most stressful years of my career. I'm really not looking forward to another year of this chaos and mayhem. Hence, in the larger interests of the students and staff, I humbly request you to reconsider your decision. Thank you for your time. Sincerely, Bo Yang, Johnson Park School Secretary. End of letter.
Thank you. Next I have Margie, I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, Engelhart, maybe? And then I need to also remind the speakers that a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, please. So if you could just condense your thoughts a little bit. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Margie Evangelista. I'm a parent / grandparent. I'm raising my kids, my grandkids. And I am, unfortunately, I just started getting involved because of health issues, but now that I'm better, believe me, I'm getting involved. And after hearing all this, it bothers me really bad. It's a shame. I've been involved in the board before for parents. I've represented parents in the past. And it is a shame to hear this going on. I never knew it. I specifically had a meeting with her. Okay, I did go to the district. I did put in my complaint. She asked me, "Did you speak with her? Please give her the benefit of the doubt." Fine, I did. I went to speak to her. I was very concerned of lack of communication. She doesn't advise anybody of anything. I specifically was so involved in, I wanted to know about tutoring. She told me there was going to be no tutoring. Okay, I know, I've been involved in the board before. I know they set monies aside for that. She could have at least told me, look, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know, but I knew there was monies aside, that was put aside for it. Come to find out, there was tutoring. Did she advise me? No. I specifically called the office, and they couldn't give me any information because she would never allow them, or she would never give them any information. They didn't know what was going on. I did go and speak with her. She unfortunately told me she didn't know, okay? When I finally found out about the tutoring, it was 2 weeks left. She didn't know it was going to end in 2 weeks. And I asked her, I says, why didn't you notify me about the tutoring? She says, well, we did. I said, no, I'm sorry, you didn't. This is why I'm here. There's lack of communication. To me, if I go to a front office, I ask, what is going on? If they know this information, if they don't know, come on. She represents the school. Okay? She, whatever decision she makes or if there's any information, she needs to notify the front office, let the teachers know of what's going on, so that way if we go to a teacher, they can give us the information. Not any of the teachers were able to do that. And I'm not saying it's the teacher's fault. I'm saying that, to me, it's very important that if there is no communication of what's going on, then, you know, I mean, honestly, what is she there for? You know, I mean, she's a nice person. I like her. She's our principal, yes. But when it comes to communication, she's lacking it. She's lacking a lot of communication. And this is not the only incident. I mean, I spoke with her for about an hour. She promised me she was going to change. She was going to, you know, let everybody know what was going on. She was more concerned as to who I talked to. What did they tell me? I'm not here to give names for anything. All I'm here for is to get what I want, which is basically find out what's going on. After hearing these stories, it really makes me mad. And I'm surprised they did not go to the media for what happened, because of it's been going on about this thing that's going on with these kids, this challenge. And for her to allow that in the school, it makes me sick to my stomach. It really does. I'm sorry. And for her, you know, to accept it, and it's okay to do it. You hear so many kids in the news that have already gotten killed. They've killed themselves because of that. And she allows something like that to happen? It really upsets me. I'm sorry, but this should never happen. In a school with kids, little kids like that, and the way they are, these kids nowadays, they're bullies, they're this, and for her to allow something like that, and it's okay? It's not okay. It's not okay. And I'm surprised that more parents didn't know what was going on, because if I would have known that happened, believe me, I would have not kept my mouth shut for nothing. You know, I would not have kept my mouth shut. If you've got kids, you're going to protect them as much as you can. I'm raising my grandkids. But you know what? I'm going to protect them as much as I can. If something like that happened, you know, you would be very upset too. I don't know if you knew about it, but you'd be very upset, because it just makes my blood boil. After hearing that, and that's just not that's not the only thing that's been happening. But I'm sorry, she told me that she supposedly calls parents and lets them know. And I said, "What log do you have? Who do you call?" Because I've never received a call, you know, about this. You know, the open house. There's always a day set aside for open house. No, she decided to combine it. Cinco de Mayo was great. But I don't think anybody knew anything about the open house or even asked. There was a table there, yes. But that's not the way it's handled. I'm sorry. There was no communication as to why it was combined. That she told me that everybody agreed to it. Who's everybody? The parents I spoke to didn't know anything about it, were upset with her, didn't bring it to her attention. They were Spanish-speaking parents, and they were upset about it, but she wouldn't do anything about it. She goes, oh, it's already been approved. You know? Who does she talk to get things approved? You know, and I'm sorry. I'm just really boiled right now because of what I heard about that story, about that challenge. I'm sorry. I really apologize. If I'm being rude, I do apologize for that, but I'm just upset. I'm really boiled right now. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Okay, next I have Jawan Gag. Hopefully it's right.
Start of letter. Good evening, Board of Trustees and MJUSD Cabinet. I'm here to speak to you tonight as a dedicated MJUSD teacher who has given my heart and soul to the MJUSD students for 13 years. As you know, teaching in MJUSD can often be challenging due to unfortunate circumstances of our children. Many come to us hungry, needing emotional support, and often longing for more than just an education. They long for someone to make them feel loved, safe, and that they belong. It has become my mission to always be there for my students and create programs which support my students' emotional needs. At the school which I have worked at Johnson Park, I have been the teacher who has been a part of PBIS, started the jogathon, been in charge of the Fall Festival, Valentine's Bazaar, PTC events, you name it, I have done it. It takes time and energy, but I do it for the students who drive my passion for ensuring that each and every one of them feels supported, cared for, and safe at our school. This past year at Johnson Park has been the most devastating year of my entire teaching career. All of these important events and pivotal parts of the Johnson Park culture have been taken away. Johnson Park in its entirety has been completely desecrated under the harrowing leadership of our current principal. A leader is one who empowers, motivates, inspires, communicates, shows empathy, listens, trusts, brings everyone together, and builds a strong team. This principal has destroyed the collaborative team that we had at Johnson Park by immediately dividing the staff and created a hostile working environment. She made us feel bullied, devalued, and isolated by her actions, words, emails, and lack of respect during every interaction. She created an unsafe working environment and jeopardized our students' safety on numerous occasions by her lack of follow-through with discipline and disregard for maintaining a safe school environment, as outlined in our safe school plan. She has violated ed code and board policy numerous times by not calling law enforcement when dangerous situations arose and when students were in crisis. For example, I was on the phone with dispatch regarding an incident. Instead of putting us on lockdown, she was trying to bring the suspect, which a parent was holding down, into our school. Luckily, 4 cop cars arrived to apprehend the fugitives and the situation was resolved. I'm sure you can only imagine what a dangerous situation this could have become for our students. She also violated school policy by not following procedures for site council and by not creating a site plan which should have involved all stakeholders and not had secret meetings when pivotal funding decisions were being made. Her lack of communication and unwillingness to connect with our families of our students has created an unwelcome campus. Parents do not feel heard and not supported. This principal is not the image MJUSD wants as a leader. Leaders become great not because of their power, but because of their ability to empower others. We need to feel empowered again. She has stripped us of our passion and our sense of dignity. The Johnson Park we knew and loved has been taken away from us, and we deserve to have our school back and our sense of dignity restored. Thank you for your immediate action in regards to removing this person as our principal of Johnson Park. Sincerely, Jennifer Eagleton. End of letter.
Thank you. Next up is Crystal Framd. Pardon? Okay, that's all right. We can come back to her.
I could read her letter.
Pardon?
Oh, I don't know.
You can go on. Let's go on to Pritpal Shergill. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing your names correctly.
Good evening, Board of Trustees and MJUSD Cabinet. My name is Pritpal Shergill. I'm an employee of the STARS After School Program, and I'll be speaking for my cousin, Dan Joel. He couldn't be here tonight. So the beginning of the letter is, My name is Dan Joel, and I have had the privilege of working for the MJUSD for almost 9 years now. The first seven of those were spent at Johnson Park Elementary. First, I was a paraeducator activity provider for the STARS program for 2 years. Then I was the site lead for the JP STARS program for 4. My final year at JP was spent as their site technology lead before I moved on to another position in the district. When I first started working for the district, I was a 20-year-old with no real direction career-wise and wanted to use my time spent here as a temporary stepping stone to hold me over until I could find another job that I felt more drawn towards. Back then, I had no intention of staying here for more than a few months at most. As luck would have it, I was placed at Johnson Park Elementary and am to this day grateful for it. Being at Johnson Park had a profound impact on me. I personally saw how dedicated the staff was to the students. I saw how engaged the kids were day by day, and I saw how positive the whole environment was at Johnson Park. I am now nearing a decade spent here in this district, and it's very much because of Johnson Park. I grew very attached to that school, the students, the parents, and the staff there. I loved my time spent there. I found the direction I was needing, and I can confidently say it's because of Johnson Park Elementary. I am deeply grateful to the school, and it is very important to me to see it thrive, even now that I am no longer working there. I truly want the best for Johnson Park. With that in mind, I feel it's critical to discuss this previous year. It has been the most damaging and destructive year I have seen. Multiple education programs were cut without logic, or in some cases without any explanation. For example, the students were not permitted to visit the library outside of their class allotted time of 20 minutes. For a class of 34 students, it left less than 40 seconds per student. This was done despite the fact that the librarian was in the library on Monday and Tuesday and had no scheduled classes. The computer lab was disassembled and new desktop model years were sent back to the district to be discarded. Staff members were regularly treated poorly and were highly distressed due to the hostile environment of this past year, myself included, even though I'm no longer a staff member there. Student behavior declined drastically, although this may not be a well-known fact since issues were regularly ignored and in some cases even attempted to be hidden from the district. Parents became increasingly frustrated and felt their needs were not met and their concerns not heard. However, this too may not be well known since many parents were blatantly avoided throughout the past year and never got the chance to discuss anything at all. All these negative changes and issues were a result of the incoming principal last year. Truly, I have never seen a more broken school site than Johnson Park was this past year. I have now had multiple staff members and parents discuss their concerns and frustrations with me throughout the year and begin crying as they do so. Students have changed dramatically as well and are now more noticeably checked out in terms of behavior and effort. With me personally, the only thing I noticed that increased was passive-aggressive hostility and hurtful false accusations about me from the principal. I must ask, what is looked for in a new principal? If simply a smiling face, then nothing needs to be changed. However, if a new principal is supposed to be someone who unifies the staff, encourages positive growth and development of the school site, reasonably attends to parent concerns and issues, and competently carries out the workload necessary to be principal, I believe this district must look elsewhere. Please do not dismiss the concerns and issues of the parents and staff now as them simply not liking a change. This principal has created many problems and broken many good practices in this past year alone. Please do not let this continue. Whatever the priority is here, whether it be the students, parents, academic achievement, or even simply the school's public display, the principal must be replaced with a more knowledgeable and hardworking individual. Thank you for your time, Dan Joel. And if I may add briefly here, I have had the privilege of working for the STARS program for almost 7 years now. Some of those years were spent at Johnson Park as well. My last year as a site lead was at Johnson Park. I'm at a different school now, and I was very saddened when I had to be moved because I personally loved working there. I actually had a chance to work with Dan when he was there as well. And the theme there was family. It was the strength of the relationship between the students, the staff, and administration. Many of the people behind me, I consider them friends, not only colleagues. So this past year, even though I wasn't at that school, when I had a chance to visit, those previous themes were non-existent, and that's sad. And it's kind of incredible that that much change could happen in 1 year. So please, I hope you take those words into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Crystal Fremd.
Hi. I'll just read the letter I wrote. I wasn't really planning on speaking. But as a former employee of MJUSD at Johnson Park, I urge you to reconsider your decision to reinstate the principal, let alone anywhere else in the district. The principal, she lacks communication skills, organization, and an ability to enforce discipline that the principal should have. Throughout the whole school year, staff members felt left in the dark about events, dates, meetings, etc. Staff members, we had to ask for a year calendar to be made. She's also very poor with communication. She would be gone. She was gone for a whole week, and we did not know where she was. After March, she didn't show up most days. In terms of discipline, she didn't take care of anything. The students all year in my classroom were being bullied, called derogatory names, fighting. Nothing would happen. No calls home, no suspensions, nothing that would actually improve students' behavior for what they did. Towards the end of the year, students started to understand that they could do anything that they wanted and there would be no consequence at all. When I returned back to school from unpaid leave after my newborn son's heart surgery, I needed pumping time. She was unsupportive, didn't meet my needs as an exclusive pumper. I offered practical solutions for increasing the time without taking away from teaching time. She rejected them all. She was disrespectful of my time while pumping. She went as far as unlocking my classroom door and walking in while I was pumping during the time that she allowed me, so she should have known what was happening. As a second-year teacher, under this principal's leadership, I was unsupported and criticized by so many things on my evaluations. She supported the other new teachers by offering demo lessons, planning with them, and just working together. I got nothing. I was never asked or offered help. Even when I asked, she never responded. Still hasn't responded now that the year's over. She lacks a sense of professionalism. When she told me she was going to non-reelect me, she told me in the middle of my workday, I was going to get my kids from recess. She walked in, left smiling. Nothing funny was said. Nothing was lighthearted. Due to the fact that I was not being supported, it made me feel that I lacked the ability to teach. I went elsewhere for feedback and support. I had an outside observation by someone in this office, and she told me the exact opposite of what she was telling me all year. So that just tells you what kind of person that she is. She was lying to me to make me feel like I couldn't do my job. In fact, she made it seem like that on my observations so that she had a reason to non-reelect me. She told me it was based solely on my observations. As a young teacher, I do not want anyone to have to go through what I did with this principal. Teaching's already incredibly hard, and not being supported and feeling like you're being discriminated against by your administrator is not what a new teacher needs. I'm incredibly lucky to have had the support of the person that observed me and my TSIP mentor. If it weren't for them, I would have spent the rest of the school year questioning myself and my ability to teach when the problem was the principal. I strongly urge you to not reinstate her. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next up is Don Mitchell.
I'd like to say thank you to the board for giving me this opportunity to speak. I am also an employee of Marysville Joint. I've been in the district, I believe July 1st, I'm a little nervous. July 1st will be 19 for me. I have a decent relationship with almost everybody I've worked with. I know a few of the board members. I know him from a night class we did years ago. Jim Fleury from my Ella days. Mr. Carrion, without a doubt, this has been the most miserable year. And the thing that I find to be so crazy about this is what I believe. And I know that my opinion isn't everything, but I believe that we did all the steps necessary. I believe we left no stone unturned. We went to her. We went to here. We went to the teachers' union. I went to my supervisor. I forgot I'm a custodian at the school, just to make that clear. I went to my supervisor. We did everything. We even talked to a member of your board a number of times and gave him written letters from the staff, written letters about stuff. This is, without a doubt, the thing that I find so hard to believe is after all this work we did over a whole year we did, because you could see it seemed like one day it would be okay. The next day, it was like we lost three steps. I don't understand. I was confused by this tremendously. I know that all the effort that was put involved in this and working to this and her. Listen, I ain't saying being principal is easy. You guys all know this. It's not. I just don't think that I think there was very little. Someone brought up the fact that we weren't privy to when she got her notice that she wasn't coming back, but I am saying it. I ain't putting words in no one else's mouth. I'm going to use my words. It felt like in March she quit. She was gone multiple days. She would be late almost every other day. She would go home early. She would be days when she'd go home before the school was out. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like if she got re-energized that last week of school. Well, we know what the re-energize was. I want to remind you guys of one thing. In 30 years I was voted, the board has never passed on the recommendation of the superintendent. Well, it has. Well, let me say this. We could also be the same board to do the right thing by rescinding this. I'm telling you right now, it's not a couple of people, which I've heard. It's not a couple of people. I've also heard that there's a member of the board who has a personal relationship who I think should have been excused from voting. They have mentored and counseled this person. I think that's unfair. I really think it's unfair. And if you look at the people that came forth to her last week, the five people, they were from an EL class that they teach at night to parents. And half of them parents don't even participate in our school. And I understand that you guys have a very difficult job. No, I couldn't do it. There's no doubt about it. I couldn't do it. But I'm as passionate about this as anything I've ever been in my life. I know without a doubt we're going to be back here at the end of this school year coming up if she stays on. We're going to be right back here. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think we do the right thing. I don't know what the process is. I'm a custodian. I think we can do the right thing. That's what I appreciate you guys taking your time to listen to me, and I just want you to have an open mind. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff Alberg.
Good evening, Board of Trustees and MJUSD Cabinet. I'm also a teacher at Johnson Park Elementary School, and I'm here because I too feel strongly about our principal. I was going to take my time and basically recap everything that we've talked about, but I know we've gone way over our 20 minutes, and you guys don't need to keep hearing the redundancy, but her lack of supervision, the lack of safety for our students, the lack of communication towards the staff, it's been an issue all year long, and it's been a stressful and hard year for all of us. I also have heard that one of the board members had a personal relationship, friendship with the principal. She's actually boasted to other staff members about this relationship, and I feel as if he should have recused himself from the vote. Another staff board member at the last board meeting that lives near Johnson Park said that he had heard about people not liking the principal and had said that it was only about one or two people that didn't like her. When we had personally handed this board member at least 10 letters documenting the problems that we were having all year long. The staff's been divided. Her friends come and go as they please. Her friends are late to school and it's okay, where others are called out all the time. Again, this list can go on and on, but I ask you that you please reconsider the reinstatement of our current principal. Thank you for giving us your time and your attention, and we apologize for taking longer than the 20 minutes.
Thank you. Okay, that was the last public comment. There has been several people have asked to do something about this. I would, you know, give the board the decision if they would like to bring it back at the June 27th meeting or not. I would need four people to say yes, otherwise we don't bring it back. So would the board like to bring this back and reconsider it on the 27th?
Yes.
Anybody else? I would like to. Yes. Anybody else want to bring it back on the 27th and reconsider it? Okay, if only three of us do?
Yes.
Four? Okay. Jim?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll bring it back on the 27th and reconsider it. Superintendent, public hearing for District LCAP. We'll open the public hearing now. Dr. Todd.
Tonight is the preview, although it's been online for folks to take a look at and to review the contents of the first 54 pages of the LCAP document. And it has not changed from last year. We're in a holding pattern. The personnel and the programs we have put into place over the last 3 years are making a difference. We've had our community meetings, we've had representatives from all of the groups, and their recommendation to me and now my recommendation to the board is we stay the course and we continue to improve student instruction so that we increase student achievement. And so with that, you have the plan.
Any questions, comments? Anybody? Nobody in the audience? Okay, then I need a motion to close the hearing.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Davis. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Rasmussen. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Six yes. We have the public hearing for the MCAA LCAP. We're going to open that public hearing now. Mr. Malone.
Hello, everybody. So this is MCAA LCAP for 2017, and well, there are some changes. That's basically what I'm going to talk about, but let's go to, am I doing this right? Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay, so our stakeholders, just like with the district, we meet with our stakeholders through site council, through staff meetings, the leadership team, and through surveys that go out to the parents. And they came up with these four things as their top concerns of what they think are needs. And it's develop and implement a plan to either renovate the Marysville Auditorium or build a new theater. Obviously, this went out after we had problems with the theater. Then more funding to support the arts programs, safer facilities and budget to make needed repairs. But we think that's related to the first item. And then continue to save funds for a third new classroom, which most of that's ready, but we still need probably about $100,000 to get that third classroom in. And then goal one, our goals are the same as the district's, provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of targeted populations. So looking at some of the things this is 2016, the first two items, graduation rate in latest available year was 100%, I think that's 2016, and the attendance rate was 98%, rounded up is about 97.8%. And then looking at 2015, the state testing in English, math, and science, You can see that in 2015, 64% of our students met or exceeded the English standards. I'm going to flip back and forth because I didn't put them side by side. And then in 2016, which is the latest available data that I have that's complete, 71% of the students in English met the standards. So that went up. And then going back to math, which I think we've always been kind of low in math, so we're working on that. But it was 37% of students met or exceeded the math standards in 2015. But then if you look at 2016, it did go up. And then, going back to 15, 84% of students met or exceeded the science standards in 8th grade and 10th grade science. And then looking at this last year, it was 97% for 8th grade and 91% for 10th grade. So we're happy with that. That's progress. That's good progress for student achievement. And then changes in actions and expenditure changes for goal one. We are increasing funding for the arts by several thousand, but we are providing a lot more funding for professional development and PLC training, which, like Gay said, we really believe in that because that pushes the... I shouldn't say pushes, but teaches. It shows us how to properly get together and collaborate about students. Not just getting together, but how to do it properly and effectively. And so because of that, we believe strongly in PLC training, and we are sending a team to Orlando, our English department, and then about four other teachers to San Jose in July. And then goal two, enhance the current learning environment to ensure that our school provides a physically and emotionally safe environment that's culturally responsive to all students. Now, this did change. So one action item we have in goal two is working with the district, develop and implement a plan to either renovate Marisol Auditorium or build a new theater, which we have been working with the district. It looks like it's probably going eventually to renovating the Marisol Auditorium for several reasons. And then temporarily increase the square footage of the stage in Marysville South Auditorium. So, you know, for the next 3 to 5 years, we need a place to go. So we have basically three options. We have Alan Scott Youth and Community Center in the afternoon. For some events, that will work. But we have to pay rent for that in the afternoon. And then we have the backstage, which we did have graduation and promotion. So we can use that when the weather's good. But the South Auditorium will work when it's too hot or too cold for most things. So one thing that we're doing is building out the stage. It's very small, so build it out so that it has more depth. So that's part of the cost that was put into goal two. And then we have to, because of the loss of the auditorium, we have to fund increased cost of productions and events due to losing the Marisol Auditorium. This includes rental costs of chairs, bleachers, fencing, security guards, and increased use of the Alan Scott Youth and Community Center. So that's all an added cost that's in goal two. And in goal three, there was really no change. It's communication with parents. But we just want to make sure, I mean, everybody knows this, but stakeholders realize that the cost of the theater or the renovation, MCA stakeholders realize this, is very expensive. But our whole program revolves around the auditorium and all the genres, all the different genres of the performing arts. So I just want to say thank you for your support. Did you have any questions about our LCAP? No? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alan Scott? Well, that's where the teachers go out with a sign, and they have a bus sign where they meet them. They have them gather right there on this side of the highway, and then they go out and they walk the kids across. And that works for 99% of the kids. The thing is... the late kid or something like that. You know, it's a little more difficult, but, so it has worked.
Yeah. And Mr. Allison, they've been doing that for the entire time the school's been in effect. Yeah. So they've utilized every performing space they could find, and that happens to be a nice large venue for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. I would like to see the test scores, the highest hearing, reaching the park students, everyone.
Thank you.
So, Tim, just to add to the Alan Scott, you actually hold classes there every day.
Yeah, all our martial arts and dance classes are out there.
Right, so they're crossing the street on a daily basis.
Yeah, and they're trained to do it, how to cross. Although, well, routine. Sometimes the young ones, though, they get a little anxious, you know.
Yeah. I guess the scary part, you hope the drivers are trained.
That's how it is.
Yeah. Seems like a couple times every year a truck gets stuck in that underpass, too. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I need a motion to close the hearing.
Move to close.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor?
Aye.
6 yes. And then we have business services. Number one, public hearing for 2017-18 proposed adopted budget.
Good evening. There's a lot of information contained here, so I'm going to try to go through it fast to kind of highlight some points, and for the sake of brevity, so we can get outside and enjoy the wonderful weather. So the budget process, you know where we are. We're finishing up 16-17. We're going to go into an adopted budget in 17-18, and that will start July 1st. A lot of the different factors that we include in the budget development, as you know, there's a multitude of factors. It gets even more detailed than this, but this is a summary. Kind of highlighting the May revision, which is the last kind of assumptions that we build into the budget. It's better than it was in January, which is good. So the governor raised his revenue forecast for the coming year, but a lot of districts are dealing with those expenditures rising faster than revenue, and I'll explain that a little bit further as it applies to our budget. And there's still a lot of those warnings about a recession. You know, we're a couple years away, a little over 2 years, from tying the record in terms of economic growth for the state. So obviously they believe a recession is due. Kind of going through some of the highlights, the $1.4 billion more total for all schools in LCFF funding. No more deferral. We're going to have a cash deferral. And the one-time funding is up, and there's a little twist, and I'll explain that as we go into the next slide. You see at the bottom it says not received until May 2019. So it said not to book it. Well, that was the governor's May revision, and actually subsequent to our budget development, the state did their budget act, adopted their budget act, the legislation. And so there will be money, not that much money, not $1.01 billion or 170 per ADA. It's about $876 million. So we expect that to be $1.2 million, $1.3 million. We'll see. So we will get one-time money for the state's budget act, so we'll have to revise the budget there on the one time. But on the ongoing factor, you can see it almost doubled in terms of ongoing revenues, and the COLA increased by 0.08. Kind of seeing full implementation, just graphical representation, we're getting very, very close. There's not a lot for us to get there, so that is kind of why there is some worry. There's not a lot of revenue out there if we fully implement by 2020-2021. You can kind of this is just what we get per grade span, and we'll show that applied in this 17-18 budget. But, you know, LCFF is over 84% of our budget, and, you know, we're at 82% right there on the cusp. So for the unduplicated pupil count, it makes a significant impact on our budget. In terms of...
Ryan, could you actually go back two slides? So when LCFF is fully funded in 2020 to 2021.
Uh-huh.
So are we thinking at that point in time that no more money is going to increase? I mean, it seems like costs are always going to increase.
Yeah, I mean, the assumption is that it would go back to a COLA-only method. So I don't know how they're going to do supplemental and concentration. But then you have your Prop 98 guarantees, which guarantees what the funding is to schools, plus we should have a new governor at that time, so it's really uncertain. We use whatever Department of Finance basically provides in terms of assumptions on revenue, because ultimately the Department of Finance is the state's specialized department for that purpose. So we'll see, but you see, we're at like 97% overall, so 3% is not much. And the problem is stuff, and we talk about it, and I'll talk about it here, is the PERS, STERS, other, our consumer price index, the things that we buy are getting more expensive, and so the revenues won't meet that. So that's why we're worried kind of the next 3 years. We're luckily in a good financial position, and we have increasing enrollment and thereby attendance, we expect. But
So even the years beyond 2020, 2021 can be more scary.
Especially if we enter a recession. So we're in a good financial position, and we're in a much better position even than we were at second interim because of these revised expectations from the governor. And the Budget Act also throws in some one-time money, which we need for other purposes. But in terms of an ongoing budget, we're in a better position. It's just there's kind of everybody saying, we don't know when, but it's coming. Like, the rain clouds are coming. We're almost implemented, so you're not going to get enough revenue. And I'll show you, there's actually a graphical representation kind of going up, and I'll come back. We're at that point right there where you see the blue is your additional revenues every year, and the red is your additional expenditures, and your additional revenues are ducking out. And that's kind of like a state average representation, but we're at that crucial point where we're not getting revenues year to year above the additional expenditures. And that's the crux of it. And with those other things that I talked about, these increasing costs, especially on the statutory benefits, the idea was to bring back LCFF full implementation and have the purchasing power we did in 07, 08. That's not going to happen, and I kept warning about that. We're not going to be able to maintain our economic purchasing power that is hand-in-hand with inflation. It just won't happen, and you're seeing that red line that goes under. Blue would get us back there, but red's kind of where we're going. You know, we have to be fiscally prudent and responsible, and it's very difficult because it's hard to predict where we're going to go. It's just we're definitely seeing more. The predictions from the different experts are definitely more aligned to, you know, the money's going to be less in terms of additional revenue. These expenditures are going to be there, so you need to prepare accordingly. So while we're in a good financial position today, the forecast is not bright. And, you know, so we got $3.2 million additional from where we projected, from where we got last year under LCFF, just on the ongoing side. And at second interim, it was, you know, almost 2.3. So it was almost $1 million increase, which is great. We're doing better. It's a 3.5% increase. But you remember last year was over $7 million. And those were good times. So, you know, now again, the revenues are right at the level. And actually, as we get into the budget, you'll see, well, these CalPERS and CalSTRS rates, again, CalSTRS didn't change, but CalPERS went down a little bit. Actually, in the May revision, there's a, outside of schools, it doesn't really impact schools, but the governor's doing a one-time payment to help pay down the unfunded liability for CalPERS. So we're hoping, like, obviously, the unfunded liability goes down with both employer and employee, even increased contributions and what the state's putting in outside, but it isn't significantly impacting us. They're still astronomical, and I'll show you how that impacts us specifically. But kind of moving from the May revision, we use those assumptions. And the only thing is with our budget, we projected increase in terms of enrollment and thereby ADA. But we don't project it in 18, 19, 19, 20. Our early projections are we do think we're going to increase in those years. But to be fiscally responsible and not count the cash before we have it, we just make that one addition year to year. So in a declining environment, you would do the opposite. You would, from a financial projection standpoint, you'd want to book that and do it. But on the increasing, we want to see the kids actually in the seats. So we get very close as we can. COLA going up, though, actually is helping. As you can see, the 1.56 and then 2.15, 2.3, that helps our projections. So if COLA increases, and we'll see if it actually does, we had a 0% COLA this year, that helps a little bit in terms of our base dollars. And you'll see, too, we only included the 5% for BUTA because at the time we were developing the budget, that was the only settlement that we had. The rest of them will come in, and we have that actually reserved in our any fund balance. So LCFF funding, again, $3.2 million, I highlighted that. And you can see the base is much larger than the supplemental and concentration dollars, 2.3 versus 0.9. You're going to start seeing that. We used to see way higher supplemental concentration in terms of the percentage of additional funding. And that gap is shrinking. You know, you're $1.4 million left at our current target. The target may move, obviously, with COLA, but that additional dollars is really only $1.4 million, unless, you know, a couple factors move. But as of right now, so that's not much to cover in the next, you know, 3 years. We talked about proportionality. We said, mentioned it. The minimum proportionality, we've been, obviously, with our settlements and the other things we've been adding through the LCAP that was presented tonight, we've been able to meet our minimum proportionality percentage because we've been using supplemental concentration dollars to increase or improve services to targeted students. So as this becomes fully implemented, if it's ever in question, we're able to show where those dollars go to help our students. In the big picture, you could see kind of in the green line, summarizes everything. It's really about, you know, we had it on an ongoing basis. You won't see it in the estimated actuals for 16-17. We had a pretty significant surplus ongoing above $6 million, but we spent a lot of that one-time money down. It goes down to 4.8 on the unrestricted side next year. Still a very healthy surplus, and that includes paying, you know, what we anticipate paying through the settlement we got with MUNA, not the other groups, but so it'll go down a little bit. It'll probably be closer to $3 million after we implement and revise the budget to reflect the other settlements, but it's much higher than we anticipated at second interim because we got about $1 million in LCFF and we got additional lottery monies and additional county office ADA. So it's higher than we projected for a multitude of reasons, which is great, but it still went down from last year, even with the additional revenue, because the expenditures were the increase in expenditures are greater this for 17-18 we anticipate than the additional revenues. So I kind of highlighted some of those revenues, and they're actually down overall, and the big reason is state revenue, one-time dollars. But we'll have more one-time dollars again, a little bit more than $1 million probably. 84%, I mentioned, that's our LCFF, so, I mean, that's our major chunks. LCFF drives our district from a revenue standpoint. And we put enrollment in here. We are increasing a little bit. You can see enrollment going up in there by ADA, and it's a little bit of an average, so we'll see where it ends up. Lottery, we put that in here. A lot of misconceptions about lottery, but you can see even next year, I mean, you're projecting $1.2 million, $37 million restricted, I mean, $370,000 about restricted. It's not a big percentage of our money, but that did help us a little bit on the additional revenues. Kind of going into salaries, you can see the certificated's obviously up a lot because that reflects the settlement and other things. And benefits, we talk about PERS and STIRS. And part of that negotiation, and the big one is capital outlays down $7.8 million. We're projecting that those additional one-time monies and capital outlay to be finished by the end of June 30th, but they won't be, so those will end up being carryovers. So when we come back in September and we talk about unaudited actuals, you'll see the surplus jump. It's jumping on a one-time basis, so we'll show you the comparison. Take out those one-time, and then you can see the ongoing true operating surplus that will be remaining. But we projected finish because we did receive the money this year. But again, those projects take time to implement and fully construct. So you can see a breakdown of expenditures. Again, salary and benefits 80%. It's a little higher than last year because the one-time money is taken out. And you can see kind of by group. Obviously, teachers group is the largest, then followed by classified, then management. And kind of we talked about the CalPERS and CalSTRS. So here's the impact. It's gone down a little bit projected. For 18, 19, and beyond on the CalPERS side. So cumulatively, it's a little less, but these are still, I mean, large amounts. And this is before you get into step and column and consumer price index on all your services and goods you buy. So it's a significant impact. It's going to take, they anticipate by the full implementation, it's going to take a quarter of the new additional revenues we're getting through LCFF have to go to statutory benefits. And then another thing we always have to deal with, and it's just we need to be conscientious about, contributions to restricted programs. The routine restricted maintenance account, that's kind of by law. You know, you have your 3%, so that's going to go up on the natural. It's just the way it is. As we have more expenditures, we have more there. But special education, just like every district throughout the state, continues to be underfunded. Another more $1 million there, and you'll see, I mean, the encroachment is quite high. State revenue and federal revenue, $5.4 million. $9 million is coming out of unrestricted. And you can see the breakdown of that. So that's something, you know, we work very hard to try to make, to diminish those expenses, but it's the reality of the education world in which we live. Ending fund balance. We do have a pretty healthy ending fund balance for the general fund, but as you can see, we have remaining COPS payments from 2006, the 5%, that's the retro that we have to go back to pay, so that will come out of ending fund balance. There's the cost of 5% for 17-18. We kind of reserve it in there, but that will end up taking down that operating surplus. But the big one you see, too, is those COPS. So even if we are able to spend down some of the ending fund balance, eventually, if we don't do something on the facilities finance, and we'll talk about that for, at a future meeting, you're going to have to spend all your ending fund balance on that, and that still won't get us to quite where we need to go. So we have uses for it. We have it, obviously, there for specific purposes, and we'll use it if necessary. So that's something we need to be conscious about, because as we get in, if we get into those recessionary periods, if we start getting to a deficit, you're going to be eating that ending fund balance. So It's not the worst time to have it, some ending fund balance now. But at the same time, ending fund balance one-time purposes and try to use it for those purposes as we put up here. Ending fund balance history, it's gone up a little bit. A lot of it, too, is we have the capital outlay and we're going to pay down. And it will be even higher next year until we spend down that one-time money and we get more one-time money. But, again, we can definitely use it for multitude of purposes. I think it's really just focusing on that operating surplus or deficit. Most of the funds haven't changed significantly. You'll see a little bit deferred maintenance. We're trying to spend down that money. Again, that money won't be spent, although we budgeted to spend, but we just carried it over. And then capital facilities a little bit, trying to do some projects and close that out. And then you'll see, but more or less, it's not a significant change from last year. Multi-year, same assumptions I showed you before. And you'll see you have a 4.6, which is combined. Most of it is unrestricted. Then it goes up to 4.9, then back to 4.6. So you might see a little uptick next year. Just is based on what COLA is going to be and what the gap funding. And then it starts going down. If you project it out further, it will keep going down. It will kind of go below that 6. So when you go to the graphical representation, you see this going up. But the surplus each year is not increasing. So it's kind of maintaining, and it might even start going down as we move past that last green bar. So if we balance the budget and we're able to determine expenditures next year where, you know, that 4.8, 4.6 goes down to about 3, and then we find other reasons to get it down to 0, then you're going to see it flat, but it might actually start dipping down as we get past into that last year of implementation, and then depending what happens, as Mr. Rasmussen said, post full implementation. So moving forward, it's really, you know, we're obviously, we still have that budget surplus, and it's due to increased LCFF revenues, the lottery funds, and the county office ADA. I mentioned that. The MUTA negotiated settlement compensation increase is in the budget, so the other bargain settlements will be revised into the budget for 17-18. That will be added. And there's no additional one-time discretionary, which I mentioned, but more will be coming per the State Budget Act. So we'll revise that, and we'll have to budget that money on projects, preferably obviously Tier 1 projects, or some other one-time purpose besides facilities. The ongoing surplus is stable as growth slows, but the future is very uncertain right now. We talked about that. So we're almost at full implementation. What that holds after, we don't know. The higher COLAs in 18-19 definitely help in terms of the base. We'll see if those are realized. Again, we had a 0% this year, so hopefully they stay that high. And then a recession is inevitable, and that's why the governor keeps warning of that slowdown. Again, you know, records can be broken, but how far they go, you know, even his projections through the Department of Finance that come into the budget are lofty. And he had to revise his projections for this current year, the 16-17, because the revenue targets weren't met. So we'll see if even next year holds. Part of his budget presentation for May revision was to keep this year the same, but he actually lowered a little bit of money from 15-16. And statutory benefits, other costs, they're going to continue to rise into the next decade, so hopefully we'll get the revenues somewhat get there. With that, I want to thank again Jennifer and her staff in fiscal services and everybody else that contributes. You know, a lot of departments have their own budgets like child development and nutrition services. So I appreciate everybody's contribution to this proposed budget.
Ryan, can you explain to me again, what was it, COPs?
They're certificates of participation. So essentially,
it seems like we had a number up there of $27 million in 18-19. Is that a bill?
Well, no, it's not a bill, but they grow every year based on the payments we have to pay out. But there's a series of payments. It pays out just like a bond. The difference with a certificate of participation is it is for facility financing and funding, but it's basically leveraged on the general fund. Bonds aren't. Bonds are leveraged on the taxpayer's property tax. So there's the 2006 ones are fine. We're okay on the payments of those. The other way to do the COPs, if you're not eating out of any fund balance, you'll have to apportion, you know, $2-plus million, depending on the year, it goes up a little bit, out of your budget itself. So if you have a surplus of $3 million and you budget $3 million to go to COPs, you can do that, but then it takes away your surplus for other operations. And that could obviously impact your educational program. And then if you get in a recession, then it is going to be eating out of any fund balance. So that's why you have that kind of earmarked for that. Not necessarily budgeted for that, but you have it earmarked. There is language built into the COPS that they can be paid down through other financing, such as a bond, at least partially. So it's out there, and that looms. Those start in 2023, so it's something we definitely, doesn't seem like long, but less than 6 years now. So
that's a substantial cost.
Yes.
There's no other way to say it.
You got to really couple that, too, with the amount of facility needs we have. And, you know, Tier 1's one thing, but Tier 2 and Tier 3, there's still projects on there that are priority. We had Mr. Malone come up here and talk about facility needs. We're going to have to not only somehow find more finance, and that's why we've been dedicating the one-time money to facilities, but that's really scratching the surface. We have so many needs facility-wise that our ongoing budget can't address. And not only are we going to have to address a lot of them, because some of them will from those tier, and we've seen it already in 1 year, go from tier two or three, go up to tier one. Because you start seeing failure or signs of failure of these. It's been so many years before they did the bonds in the district were issued in 2006 and 2008 that they're not as quick as you try to spend money to knock items or cross items off the list, more items will be added or become.
And that's why we want to have a board study session in July to talk about the COPS and how we're going to address that in the future and to start to develop a plan
and
of attack.
You have general fund monies leveraged on top of that need for that. And even with the facilities, we're going to have to be very creative in how we address items. You have to use your facility money to get the biggest bang for your buck type thing, you know. And so it's going to be probably the biggest challenge we always talk about on the business side. Financially, we're in good shape. We'll see. Obviously, as we know with the last great recession, things could happen that are just devastating to school districts. So hopefully that will not happen again. Thank you.
Any questions? No questions. Thanks, Ryan. Now we need a motion to close the hearing.
Move to close.
Motion by Mr. Crawford, seconded by Mr. Allison. All those in favor? Six yes. Move on to Personnel Services number one, tentative agreement with CSEA 648. Mr. Carrion.
Yes, thank you and good evening. The purpose of this particular agenda item is to request the board approve the now agreement. It was a tentative agreement at the time of writing between the Marysville Joint Unified School District and the California School Employees Association Chapter 648. As with the other then tentative agreements, it calls for a 5% total compensation package. In this particular situation, CSEA 648 has elected to take some of it in the form of increasing their monthly benefit cap, and the district will accommodate that. In addition to that, since 4% will be ongoing, the district requirement in the potential use of supplemental concentration grant dollars is to increase the work year by an additional 2.22%, and that too will be ongoing. So we recommend the board approve the, as written, tentative agreement this evening.
Any questions? No questions. Is there a motion? Motion by Mr. Allison. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor?
Aye.
Six yes. Personnel Services number two, tentative agreement with the supervisors unit.
Yes, thank you again. It should be noted that negotiations with supervisory union, in addition to in future discussion with AMACE, are a meet confer courtesy. They're not a recognized group by the Public Employment Relations Board, but the board, as past practice and through the leadership of our superintendent, has extended more of a negotiation type environment as a professional courtesy to ensure that our supervisory unit members are given the opportunity to have a say as to how increases will be applied to their needs. Having said that, the purpose of this agenda is to request that the board approve the tentative agreement, now also an agreement since it's been ratified, between the Marysville Joint Unified School District and the supervisory unit. It calls for a 5% total compensation. In addition to that, since that 5% is ongoing and they took it all on salary, then supervisory unit members will have their work year increased by 2.22%, and the board will, if approved, allow staff to provide for an annual safety shoe allowance for our supervisors who work in the child nutrition department, and that will commence with their first pay warrant in the new fiscal year. We recommend that the board approve the agreement as presented tonight.
Questions? Comments? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Davis. All those in favor?
Aye.
Six yes. That was the last item on the agenda.
I just would like to ask you, board members, to please leave your budget packet, your district LCAP, and your MCAA packet. We will be bringing back no longer draft, but the final versions for you for our next board meeting on the 27th. So if you'll leave those, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
The meeting's adjourned.